So we left off last week. We were talking about the unique type of a possible ger katan, and that was the sugya mubarish and his gaira. So just to recap for a minute, we mentioned that everybody subscribes to this din that if a pregnant woman converts, then b'noi tzarich tefila, you don't have to subsequently be toivel the child. It's not clear in the Gemara what the reason is. Either it's based on uba yerchimo, or it's based on that it's an independent tefila on behalf of the baby. And then, even within, even a niach that's an independent geirus, it also wasn't clear, is the geirus completed at the time of the tefillah, or is the geirus pending upon the milah? So that was the Ramban's riot we spoke about a couple of weeks ago, and the Ramban says that the geirus of Muberish and his gaira is basically the same as any other geirus. You're doing milah and tefillah, just you're doing it out of order, and the Ramban actually brought a riot from here that, so what? So it's out of order, big dust, I'm not going to give anyway the order. And the Ra'o was doicha that raya by saying no, that normally the order is makev for different reasons that we spoke about in the past. The only reason why here you can do the tefillah first is because the baby is not roi lekach to have a milah. You can't do the milah while it's in utero, and although maybe today they could, I don't know, but they can't do the milah in utero, and therefore the fetus has the status like an akeva, and the gerus is complete with the tefillah itself. So again, it's not 100% clear what's going on with this gerus. We know there's a gerus. That's not a shav. That's not up for discussion. For sure there's a gerus. We're not quite sure. Is it a ger katan, not a ger katan? And again, there'd be nafkaminas ladina. One of the nafkaminas we mentioned at the end of the shiur last week is that, would you say, gdili chalom limchos in such a geirus? If it's basically rooted in ger katan, then the answer would be yes. If it's part of the geirus of the mud, then the answer would obviously be no. There's probably another relevant issue, that's the suffix that the Neid Behuda raises, is that what if the bezin doesn't even know if the woman is pregnant? What if the woman doesn't know she's pregnant? So would that be acceptable or not? So if you hold that it's part of the geirus of the mother, so then it's hard to believe that the bezin has to know about it. Let's say a woman happens to have three kidneys, and then 20 years later she realizes she has three kidneys. So if the bezin only thought she had two kidneys, so one kidney isn't Jewish, that's a joke. So if it's part of the geirus of the mother, so it's nichol in the geirus of the mother, so the bezin are supervising the geirus of the mother, whatever's included in the mother. But if you hold that it's a separate, distinct geirus, so then you have a further shaila, is it necessary for the bezin to be aware that they're supervising the geirus? Can the bezin supervise the geirus without even knowing what they're doing? So we spoke a little bit about this in the past also. We spoke about the role of bezin back to Tosis in Yevamos about not knowing where the tefillah, etc. So this is already open question. But one thing seems to be pretty clear from this entire sugya in the Gemara and the Rishonim is that there's a geirus that has to take place. We're bending over backwards and coming up with different lomdei shachamps as to how the geirus is working, but nobody said that you don't need a geirus. But that in of itself is a little bit startling, because one would have expected that, wait a second, maybe you don't need a geirus altogether because this baby is born from a Jewish woman. It means at the time that the mother gives birth, the mother's Jewish. The holiday, she's Jewish. So why is the Gemara bending over backwards, standing on her head to try to figure out how to be makshed this geirus? Who said you need a geirus altogether? Isn't the mere fact that you're born to a Jewish mother, doesn't that in and of itself determine that the person is Jewish? So the simple reading of this Gemara is that is not correct. That although the Mishnah says in Maseches Kedushin that a mother determines Jewishness, that is true, that is accepted, that the mother determines Jewishness, but it's not clear how do you define a mother. Maybe a mother is not defined by the person who actually gives birth to the child. Maybe the mother is the one who's conceived the child. So here you have a strange situation where this baby was conceived by a non-Jewish mother and then it was given birth to by a Jewish mother. Now, until 50 years ago, so nobody could have ever dreamt of such a thing, they could have two different people, you know, one conceiving, one giving birth. The only way to dream such a thing up is in the world of halacha, in the unique world of the halachic approach to life, so you can have two different people contributing to the creation of this child. But now, maybe we can be medayek for the fact that the Gemara is searching for a geirus, and the Gemara is working hard to find a geirus, and the Rishonim are arguing about the nuances and the details of this geirus. The underlying impression is that you do need a geirus, which may lead us to believe that conception is a very important part of determining what a mother is. Now, that's the pashas in the sugya. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's the only determining fact. And maybe one could argue that in order to be a halachic brother, you have to have both. You know, until two generations ago, it was inconceivable any other way. So the mother who conceived was the mother who gave birth. So maybe the halacha was nimsa that you have to be a mother, mitchila v'yatzayif. You have to be the conceiving mother, the egg mother, the DNA mother, as well as the birth mother. Just because the Gemara is putting significance to the conception doesn't mean it's giving exclusive significance to the conception. On the other hand, maybe our raya is not a raya altogether. Maybe we misread this Gemara. So there are a group of Echarenim who have different ways of understanding this Gemara, each one in a slightly different creative lumdish way, as to why maybe this Gemara doesn't impact the Nashayla. There is a void from Rav Naftali Trupp in the Chiddush HaGranat, where he tries to put a little lumdish spin on this, that there are two parts of being Jewish, there's being part of Am Hashem, being part of Kiddush Yisrael. It's like appropriate for, you can talk about the Yom HaTzibur or something. That's a whole different spin. Maybe the Gemara is addressing one aspect of Klal Yisrael, not another aspect, lumdish, lumdish avarts. But again, the pashas of the sugya is that we can't just close our eyes to conception. So there is a big machlekes apelskim, yaduam, forsam. There's a big machlekes, the gedolei harban, gedolei apelskim in today's world. What is the final word on this issue? What exactly determines Jewishness? Is it the birth mother? Is it the conception mother? Is it a combination of the two? And of course, this has very, very real nafkaminas ladina. This is a very, very serious shaila. The issue of whenever you have any kind of host mothers, so you have whether you have a non-Jewish egg being put into a Jewish woman, or you have a Jewish egg being put into a non-Jewish woman, kaina v'chaina. So you have to raise all these questions as to is the child Jewish or not. So different, but they didn't have different practices about this. Again, I'm far be it for me to be machriya for but they didn't. But it would appear to me, my humble opinion, that it's very hard to take an absolute stand on this shaila. I mean, to say b'vados, to be absolutely convinced one way or the other, it's hard for me to say. Stomach, this fake alone afka, that one would probably have to err on the side of caution, all these kinds of things. Namely, that any time you have either an egg mother or a birth mother that is not Jewish, we would probably want to insist on a gerus. Now, insisting on a gerus is not that complicated, so we'll just throw in gerkot and call it a day. So it could have ramifications a little bit down the line. One of the most serious complications is vis-a-vis who the girl can marry. Let's say if it's a girl, it's a boy, it's less of an issue, but if it's a girl, who could she marry? Because a gioris is a surah to a kohen for different reasons in the Mishnah why, and but the Lamaisa, when all the dust settles, it's also. It's also in a Torah for gioris to marry a kohen. So the question is this girl a born... born Jew, was this girl a Gioras? It gets even more complicated because even within the sugya of Muberish and his Gaira, even in the classic case, the original case of the Gemara, Muberish and his Gaira, so we also would not want that girl to marry a Kohen. That's also a complicated child. There's a very, very real child that comes up also. So whenever you have any of these kinds of Sveikis and Cheshashas, of any Gairas that's being required over here, so we're going to try very hard that such a girl should not be marrying a Kohen. So again, there are different Rabbanim have different opinions on this. I think that probably the consensus that the most of the Batei Dinim today is try to earn this out of caution. We don't want a person to walk through life being a Suffolk Jew, so well, it's much easier to be Magai Samar Lechum and be Suffolk rather than get involved in these kinds of shilas. So I want to take just the bulk of this shiur to talk not so much about the process of Gairus per se, but almost some of the beginning, some of the pre-Gairus issues and some of the post-Gairus issues. So we spent a lot of time about the meal, the tefillah, kibbutz mitzvahs, and the days, then and get cut and all the details of the Gairus itself. But there's a whole host of halachas that are important before the person even gets anywhere near the mikvah, and there are a whole series of halachas that impact the nuchas geirim after the person is already a full-fledged Jew. So let's try just to familiarize ourselves with some of the more common issues that come up. So we already mentioned the Gemara Maseches Yevamos tells us that we really want to try to separate those who are authentically interested in Judaism in contrast to those who have some kind of an agenda. What about some of the most common agendas that people have? So the Gemara in Yevamos in the fourth prayer quotes a brayse that it says, when a person converts, wants to come to convert, so the first thing we ask them is, well, maybe you're looking to marry a Jewish girl, maybe you want to marry a Jewish boy. So if the person is converting for the purposes of marriage, that's a no-no. That's something that we would not want to get involved in. So the Gemara says we're supposed to discourage a person. We're not supposed to accept somebody if they're being megayel l'shem ishus. The Gemara says that b'di'evid, if you're megayel l'shem ishus, b'di'evid, the gerus is still chal, because the Ritva explains that we assume that the person probably was mekabel mitzvahs, b'lev shalom, we hope, at least they're mekabel mitzvahs, b'lev shalom. So the mere fact that they did it for the wrong reason, that in of itself, at least the Gemara seems to say, doesn't disqualify the gerus, but it's still something that we're not supposed to do. So we're supposed to, we really have no justification to be megayel somebody if we know for a fact that we strongly suspect that they're being megayel l'shem ishus. Nevertheless, there was already a whole group of tshuvas that were written already in Europe. This problem didn't start in America, it already started back in Europe. That and again, these were problems that started once you had Jews who were secular Jews, and it became, in a sense, mekubal. We spoke about this in the past, that 500 years ago, there was no such thing as a secular Jew. Either you're Shomer Torah mitzvahs, or at least you made believe that you were Shomer Torah mitzvahs, and if you weren't, so then you basically became a Christian. There was no place for you to go, because the whole world was divided into religious society. once the, you know, if the days of Napoleon and the Enlightenment, emancipation, and the ghetto walls fell down, so then you could be a Jew and not be Shabbos Shabbos. You could be a Jew and have no shaykhes, anything religious. And that was, quote unquote, you know, an acceptable option. So once, again, once the, you know, the world entered into that Homer movement in the end of the 1700s, 1800s, so, you know, in the Free of the Kedira, so there weren't too many Jews who were interested in marrying too many non-Jews. I mean, it really wasn't, there was nothing all that enticing about non-Jewish society. I mean, in the back of the 1300s, so the odds that someone's going to go leave Yiddishkeit to go marry the peasant's daughter or something, so it was probably not too likely. But as the Jews started to, you know, get a little more mobile up in society, so then, you know, then assimilation started and intermarriage started and we have a whole new epochal of problems. So the shadow became, if you have somebody who wants to convert, and we think they're going to be from, to some degree they're going to be from, so we're kind of okay with their Shemir Sam, with their Kabbalah Mitzvahs, but we know why they're doing it. We know what happened. We know the background is, it's the Shum Ishus. We know that this particular non-Jew wants to marry this Jewish girl, this particular non-Jew wants to marry this Jewish boy. So what do we do? So the Gemara says, we shouldn't get involved. We said, leave it, don't get involved. But b'dieved, it would be okay. So some Rabbanim in Europe came up with this idea that since it's only l'chatchila not to accept them, sometimes we have rules, almost like shasat chak b'dieved dami. Sometimes there are extenuating circumstances that let us do certain things that we would normally not do under l'chatchila circumstances. What is the shasat chak? So the question is, what's the other option? What is going to happen otherwise? So if the other option is going to be that the Jewish partner is going to listen to us and say, we're going to tell the Jewish partner, listen, don't marry this person, they're not Jewish, we're not going to accept them. So the person can say, okay, great, let me go sign me up in YConnect, I'll find a Jewish person to marry. If that's going to be the other option, so great. But what's the other option potentially going to be? I say, no problem, thank you, Rabbi Orthodox, and I'll find another rabbi from another denomination who's more, a little bit more lenient, and he'll accept me, and he'll accept our family, and he'll marry us off, and Shalom Yisrael. And that's basically a ticket out of authentic Yiddishkeit. So now the question becomes, what do we do with that information? So again, if we think the person is not going to be sharing Torah mitzvahs at all, so then we're not gaining anything by quote unquote converting them, because the gear is not going to be chal anyway. But if we think that the person will pretty much live an Orthodox lifestyle, they're gonna come to shul, they're gonna keep shabbos, they're gonna keep kosher, they're gonna keep the basics. So we would look the other way in terms of the evidence of this gear being valid. The question is, should we just be sticklers on the din of a makabel l'shemishus, or should we say that the ramifications of not being makabel l'shemishus are much more serious problems for this family and for the Jewish community as a whole? So maybe it would be more important for us to be mevater on that iser derabanan or etzah tayv derabanan, or whatever you want to call it, of not being makabel l'shemishus, provided that the gamers will lemais at the end of the day be valid. So one can already begin to sense it's a very, very slippery slope, very, very, very fine line in this. But there were Gedolei Olam in Europe who were willing to accept certain gerusim under these circumstances, and there have been in America, for sure there have been these kinds of gerusim that have been accepted. Now again, very often, you know, the metzias is that the person's not makabel, and the person, the whole thing is a sham, and the whole thing is klapi chutz, as we spoke about in the past, but sometimes not, sometimes the kabbal is fairly authentic, even though it was said about for the wrong reasons. Again, this is in the Dain al-Mashe and Avroos to determine whether they feel that this is an appropriate approach.
How commonly does it occur that the husband would get or the Jewish spouse would get the person converted through Reform and Conservative if they didn't convert Orthodox, but the person would still be?
So it depends. You know, again, it's a hard world. You know, these tshuvas were 80 years ago, 100 years ago. You had already in Europe, others already dealt with these sagas. I don't know. You know, each generation has to size up and assess whether there's anything to be gained by these kinds of garrison. Again, but the starting point is, you know, the Svari Shaina is that you're not really supposed to be makabel l'shum ishus. So we spoke about when we have someone who's a prospective ger, so we're trying to do everything to discourage them. Like, we don't want to be mean to them, we don't want to create a chil Hashem, but we are trying to be, a little bit hard on them to encourage them that if they're not really interested, so we really don't want them to make this life commitment. It's for this reason that also, but the dinim are very, very weary when we convert, let's say, teenagers. So this is a very, very common shaila. You know, the kid's 15 years old and he's involved in some, you know, Kira program, and then all of a sudden, you know, after a little bit of research, we come to the realization that his mother was never Jewish, or his mother converted with some very, very shaky conversion, his grandmother converted shaky, and we realize that basically we most probably have somebody not Jewish in front of us. So now what do you do? So the kid's really, really psyched up. He wants to, you know, he signed up to go into his white summer program. He's ready to roll. You know, he wants to jump into the mikvah tomorrow. So the Batei Dinim are rightfully so very, very weary to do that. You know, a 15-year-old kid doesn't always have the Yeshiva Das to make the right decision. So we try to weigh things out a little bit. How we deal with it, with the Kira programs, that's That's the kiruv professional's problem. But as Rabbanim, so we should try to encourage these people to get in touch with a reputable Beis Din and to map out some kind of a plan as to when is an appropriate time to be Magayar them. And again, I don't want to put like a number, 18, 19, 20, 20, you know, I don't know if those is an absolute number, but responsible for what they did, and we're not going to go run around being Magayar 14-year-old, 15-year-old kids, because it's, you know, the kid gets into a summer program, Lav Dafki is willing to make a lifelong commitment. So you have to be very careful when you're dealing with these kinds of things. So sometimes Hilchas Geirus, and especially these kinds of scenarios of Hilchas Geirus, set up situations for us where you have people who are a long time under our care. They're kind of attending, sometimes they're attending our institution, sometimes they're not being in our shuls. They may even be in our yeshivas, it's possible, that either they're not Jewish legamrei, belishim suffik, or there's some kind of a real suffik. You know, again, different nuances of what suffik is. And that question is, how do you deal with these kinds of people? So if somebody's mamish outright not Jewish, so we'll talk about that first. So they're, okay, person's not Jewish, okay, not Jewish. So how does it impact us? Well, it impacts us in that there are halachas that govern how our mitzvahs play out for non-Jews. So the most clear example is the Gemara Maseches Sanhedrin speaks about a non-Jew keeping Shabbos. So you have somebody who's mamish not Jewish, the chol hadayis, the mother was never converted to anybody, and the kid's mamish not Jewish. So then the child is not really supposed, this person is not really supposed to keep Shabbos. The Gemara says, "Akam sheShabbos is a problem." Lo yishbosu, it's an issa deraisa. So the question is, what does that mean practically? How do you avoid that issur? So again, if the kid's coming, he's coming on a summer program, or he's in our yeshiva, he's in our camps, he comes to shul, he davens better than everybody else. There was a certain kid who was we were dealing with who was head and shoulders above everybody else in the particular program, even though a few of the people involved knew that he wasn't just a chodesh, he was mamash a goy gomer, but he was doing much better than everybody else. So one of the rabbanim was ma'orah because there was. He didn't have a Yetzirah, because for him, the Yetzirah wasn't stopping him from learning. He was learning 14 hours a day. He was davening, 3 hours from Esrei, because the Yetzirah couldn't care less about him. But that was the Jewish kids, so the Yetzirah put up a fight, so the kids couldn't get out of bed to come to morning Seder. So anyway, whatever it is. So what do you do in terms of Shemir Shabbos? You have to make sure that the person does some kind of an act of Chol Shabbos. Obviously, this has to be done with the utmost care and sensitivity. You don't want to embarrass anybody. Don't make a whole, draw a whole attention that he should come in and turn on the lights, in the base medrash for everybody. You have to think about Nate's how to do it properly. So and the question also becomes, we touched on this a little bit earlier, about what's called Chol Shabbos. So how much Chol Shabbos is called Chol Shabbos? That's a very lumdish shaila. Do you need, is it the Jewish standard of Chol Shabbos, or is it almost like the secular standards of what's called, what's called resting? So there is a machlekes Rashi in the Rambam about what this is all about. Why can't a goy keep Shabbos? What's wrong? What's the rationale behind a goy not keeping Shabbos? So Rashi and Sanhedrin writes, because Shabbos is a very, very dangerous day. Shabbos, it's not a good day, Shabbos. Please don't misquote me on that one. Why? Rashi says, you don't work, and you don't do anything productive, and you sit around, you get into trouble. But Talam Mevila De Shimu. That's why, if I'm not mistaken, I think that the crime rate on weekends is significantly higher than during the week. If a guy goes to work from 9 to 5, so there's a limited amount of time that he can get into trouble. But if a person's sitting around doing nothing, so he gets himself into trouble. So Rashi says that if you have Shabbos and you're just not working, but you don't have Kiddush and you don't have Siddur Shabbos, you don't have Cholent, you don't have Oneg, you don't have Davening, you don't have Shai Mikra, you're not learning, you're not going to Shul. So Shabbos is a very, very risky day. So the non-Jews keeping Shabbos, what does that mean? It means he's not learning, he's not Davening. Maybe these people are, but they're not learning, they're not Davening. What they're doing is just sitting around twiddling their thumbs all day. So Rashi says that's a problem, that the Torah doesn't want that. That's the model, that's the reason why it's also. According to Rashi, one could argue that the Isser is not really Lamites Malachas. It means just make sure the guy doesn't sit around doing nothing. So maybe one could argue, we'll give him a job to schlep beds in the bunk from one side to the other. We'll give him he'll collect all the, I don't know, he'll move the shtenders around. I don't know, he'll do something that it's not in Shabbos stick a spirit or something. Something that we wouldn't, we don't consider to be Chil Shabbos Gomor. On the other hand, it's something that's not sitting around doing nothing. Maybe that would be sufficient, according to Rashi, that we don't have to mamish tell him to write his name. You don't have to tell mamish to strike a match. You can tell him to do something like that. The Rambam has a whole different word. The Rambam writes that the reason why you're not allowed to keep Shabbos is because it's nothing to do with Shabbos per se. The Rambam writes it's Chiddush Das. That means, why is he keeping Shabbos? He's keeping Shabbos because he wants to show he's starting a new religion. So the Rebbeinu Shlomo gave two religions in the world. There is Torah mitzvahs, that's one religion for those who are Jewish, and then he gave Sheva mitzvahs but no for the rest of the world. So if a person is born Jewish, that's his job. He was born into this religion. If he wasn't born Jewish, he could remain in the religion he was born into, or he has the option to be Magayar. But one option that doesn't exist as the Rambam is to make your own religion. Religion by definition means the Kodesh Baruch Hu makes the rules for religion. We don't make it. It's not a smorgasbord. So if a guy's going to come and say that I want to keep Shabbos, and I'm going to keep Kashrus, and I'm not going to wear Shatnez, but on the other hand, Yom Tov I'm not going to keep, and I'm not going to, he starts making Cheshbonos, what he is and not going to do. So the Rambam writes that's called Chiddush Das, and that's the problem. So according to the Rambam, it's not to do with Shabbos per se. It's a general approach against Chiddush Das. Maybe one could argue, as the Radvaz writes, let's say the person's agenda is not to be Mechadish Das. He's not claiming to starting a new religion called, he keeps Shabbos as a non-Jew. He's keeping Shabbos because he's in an Orthodox camp. So everyone else is keeping Shabbos. He's keeping Shabbos because it's fun. He's on a Shabbaton, so he's keeping Shabbos. So maybe one can argue that's not the Yisra the Rambam was. That's not the Yisra Chazal we're talking about. So that would be another Shtikul Limitzchus. If you have somebody who's not technically a Jewish, but so maybe you don't have to go run and force them to be mamish, write your name every Shabbos, or strike a match every Shabbos. Maybe you could argue that if they're doing it for other agendas, other reasons, not out chiddush das, maybe according to Ram would be okay. So again, there are limudei schusim on some people in the process of game who are not necessarily being machmet between chal Shabbos and chol hadayis every Shabbos, maybe. But other poskim say no, that we should follow the gemara kipshuto, that we should insist that the person is chal Shabbos, and the standard chal Shabbos is the Torah's definition. So it almost becomes a little bit of a amusing question. We have to search around for Chol Shabbos. It's becoming harder and harder to find Chol Shabbos deraisa in our world. In the old days, it was very simple. Chol Shabbos, go to your field and start harvesting your crop. That's a Chol Shabbos. Today, give me a Chol Shabbos. Strike a match, okay? That's pretty Chol Shabbos. It's hard not to go to Chol Shabbos. I don't know. Let's say turning on a light. So it depends what the light was. If it's an incandescent bulb, we don't have incandescent bulbs. It's fluorescent bulbs. It's psychrations. I know I can make a whole case that may. I'm not advocating this. But, it comes out a strange day. According to the Chazanish, who says turning on electric light is deraisa of machbapatish or bonah. So a bonah, whatever the Chazanish says, it's bonus. And then that would be a good thing to tell the going to do. But maybe I don't like the Chazanish. I hold the Kushlom Zalman that it's only a derabanan. So it becomes a very, very bizarre situation. This is what fueled the famous joke about when the person was a guy and he was looking for something to be Chol Shabbos. So he carried something outside. So he announced everybody, I'm carrying because it's Chol Shabbos. So the person said, but there's an Erev here. So the person said, I don't hope in the Erev. So Chol Shabbos. So it's a certain degree of seriousness to that discussion that you have to sometimes find something for somebody to do Chol Shabbos. So maybe writing, that's a good thing. Writing's a pretty kosev of malacha. Not 100%. There are some Rishonim, who say that writing in other languages besides Ksav Ashuris, or in Greek, if you happen to know how to write Greek. So if you write in other languages, maybe it's only Derabanan. Yeah, I'm not saying that we pass like that. Mishnah Berurah didn't think we pass like that, but there are Rishonim who say that. I remember the first time I ever heard that was, I was in eighth grade, and a rabbi at the time was trying to impress upon us about that we shouldn't be going to movies. So he gave us the following marshal. He said that, what do you think is a worse avera, to do English homework on Shabbos or to go to the movies? So everybody said, oh, come on, rabbi, go to the movie. Go to the movies is nothing. Go to the movies, doing homework on Shabbos, that's awesome in the Torah. So the rabbi said, nah, doing English homework on Shabbos, that's a machlekes rishonim. Going to the movies, that's for sure awesome in the Torah. Now again, between you and me, I don't think that marshal is correct, because Rav and rishonim hold that writing English is the right, that's an eseskila going to the movies. I'm not advocating going to the movies, but I'm not sure I would have given that, but that marshal made such an impression on me that 40 years later, I still remember the zalm of that marshal. So it's not always so easy to find something that's a real bona fide deraisa. So we try to encourage the person to not really be mechal Shabbos in the fullest sense of the word. There are other potential things that he has to be careful about. There's a limud haTorah. So the Gemara says that a goy is not really supposed to learn Torah. We're not supposed to teach him Torah. You're allowed to teach him Shabbat Tzipin Noach. That's okay. The Netziv claims you're allowed to teach Torah Shabbat, because the Psukim say that they wrote on the Avonim, they wrote on all the stones, and Shivim Lashon. What are they writing in Japanese for? For who? Well, the Jews didn't know how to read Japanese. So the answer is they're writing for all the goyim. Should read Chumash. So you see from here that it's okay for goyim to learn Torah Shabbosav. That's okay. So I get the shad all the time. People want to write like a paper in college or something for a non-Jewish professor. So and it's about some kind of a Jewish topic. So they want to know, they're allowed to do, is that called Magid Rav Yaakov, Mosa Dibur Torah Yaakov? Is that called teaching Torah to a non-Jew? So I say to him, so try to work around Torah Shabbosav, try to work through issues of ethics and morality. Those in Goyim are supposed to be ethical and moral people. Also, Rav Nisim Gon is an Akdamah to Shas, writes that the Gemara speaks about Shev Mitzvah Bnei Noach, but it's not Lav Dafka 7. He says anything that's being a good, normal, ethical, moral person, Derech has basic manners, Goyim have to keep also. He has a riot from the Gemara says in Mappis that a Kadosh Baruch Hu got angry at Avimelech because he was doing things that weren't so tzanua, that he was asking, they were asking funny questions. Sarah came to town with Avram, they started asking, are you a sister, are you a wife? So the Gemara says, Derech Eretz, you don't ask such kind of questions. So Rav Nisim Gon, so for the Goyim, he asked the Kash, he said, why did Rosh Hashanah from Avimelech? He wasn't Jewish, so he didn't have the proper nimusim, so he didn't have the proper manners. Since when is manners part of the Shev Mitzvah Bnei Noach? So he says, no, it's understood. Manners means to be a human being. You have to be a mensch. So to be even a non-Jew has to act like a mensch. As they quote from the Brisker Rav, that they ask the Brisker Rav, how come it doesn't say in the Chumash, don't be jealous, don't be angry, don't be all midas rolls, don't be stingy. The Torah doesn't say those things. So the Brisker Rav supposedly said that the premise of the Torah is that we're speaking to human beings. So if a person is an angry person, is a stingy person, is a greedy person, he's not a person yet. He has to first become a normal human being, whether he's Jewish or not Jewish. And once you perfect yourself as a normal human being, then we're going to give you 613 mitzvahs. But this is kodma Torah. It's kodma Torah in the sense of the word, just to be a normal person. So anything that has to do with ethics and morality and those kinds of things, or Torah Shabbosav, that you can speak to the goyim about. So many poskim hold that for the purposes of Geirus, you're allowed to teach them also whatever is relevant to help them become Jewish. The Gemara says that Modinus on mitzvahs kalas. You have to teach them a little bit of mitzvahs. If a person is going to convert, he has no idea what Shabbos is, so you have to tell him a little bit. So it doesn't say in the Torah Shabbosav that you're not allowed to do Boyer and Shabbos. You have to teach a little bit. You don't have to read every single, you know, Shabbos Shabbos Gechosos footnote, but he has to have some kind of a smattering of what Shabbos is, what Yom Tov is, what other mitzvahs are. So whatever's for the purpose of the process of Geirus, some of that wasn't included in this Isser. So that's usually what happens today, that the person in the process of converting, so we guide them, we teach them whatever we feel is necessary, b'halacha, b'machshava, b'ashkafa, in order to get them to the right place. Yom Tov poses an interesting challenge, potentially, because there's a din that Gemara has in Sechel Berg HaBeit, so that you're not supposed to cook on Yom Tov for Goyim. The din is Lachem V'lo Li'akom. It's an Issa D'Raisa to cook for a Goy. There's a Shaila in the Rishonim, whether it's an Issa Lav or an Issa Rese, Nafkamina would have come Apostle Yedus. So the Prima Godim has a 10-page piece about this. If you cook for a Goy on Yom Tov, whether you're Apostle Yedus or not. That's an interesting Shaila. But Lamais, it's also. Bottom line, it's also the Lachem V'lo Li'akom. It's a Shaila, whether it's an Assay or an Issa Lav. So that's what the Gemara says in the Sechel Berg HaBeit, so that you're not supposed to invite a non-Jew to your house for a Yom Tov meal, because Shema Yabe Bishviloi, you're afraid that the guy's going to come and you're going to end up cooking for him. Now, if, let's say, you're putting up a pot of soup and you have 10 Jews eating and then an 11th non-Jew is there, no big deal, that's okay. Because you're allowed to, I'm allowed to cook, as long as it's the big Techad HaTircha, it's in the same pot, you're allowed to cook on Yom Tov for more people. But even if I'm not planning on eating the food at all, but if I'm going to cook a separate pot, or let's say the non-Jew is going to ask me to make him a cup of tea, if I'm going to make a separate cup of tea for the non-Jew, that's going to be a serious problem. And so therefore, Chazal instituted a gezeira, you shouldn't invite him for the meal in the first place. Shemayav b'shvilei. So this always poses a challenge, because on the one hand, we would like to invite the non-Jewish people in the process of geirus to our Yom Tov meals. We want them to see a Pesach Seder. We want them to see what a Sukkah is. We want them to experience a Rosh Hashanah. Like, we want them to be involved to get a sense of what they're getting themselves into. On the other hand, the din is that you're not really supposed to do that. So some years it's very easy, because the din is that, let's say it's a Shabbos and Yom Tov together. So that's okay. A Shabbos, you're allowed to invite a non-Jew, because you're not going to cook. You're not going to make your own tea. So you're not going to make a tea for him either. So if it's a Yom Tov and a Shabbos, this year we were okay. We had 4 days of Pesach, so 2 out of 4 were Shabbos anyway, first day and last day. So you can invite them for the first Seder this year. The second Seder comes a little bit more questionable. So there is an opinion that has been suggested that maybe somehow this Issa doesn't apply when it's in the process of Geirus. I know that such a heter has been suggested. I think we ran to the same brick wall last year. We didn't really understand it. Did we understand it last year? I don't think we understood last year. I'm not sure we understood the year before. So I haven't been as chadish to me anything about it. But again, I don't know whether Rabbanim are relying on that. But I Chilis covered those Kedoli Olam who suggest. I personally didn't understand what it was based on. So I don't know. I can't say more than that. The Pasha says that you're not supposed to. So let's say the person invites themselves. So you don't have to disinvite them. Let's say if a person comes and says, the guy's been eating by you every Friday night, and now he says, I want to come for the Yom Tov meal. So you have a chuyif to say, nope, you're a goy, you can't come. As long as you didn't initiate the request, that's okay. It's like, Lamosha, let's say you have a cleaning girl who's working in your house on Yom Tov, so you have to give her food. You're not allowed to sit down and eat your own meal before you give her food. That's a shalva deraisa. The Gemara says in Brachos, you're not allowed to sit down and eat before you give your animals. So the post came right, kavachoyimit to a human being, even a non-Jew. So you have to always ask, a lot of people are not careful about this. They sit down to the Shabbos meals, the Yom Tov meals, and then the non-Jewish help doesn't eat till 2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So that's a very serious problem. So you have to offer them. That doesn't mean they have to eat. Very often they don't want to eat now because they feel funny eating because everyone's sitting down, the company's sitting down. So they feel funny rushing the meal. So what I always do is whenever we have a non-Jewish person working there, I always offer them. I said, please feel free to take food whenever you please. And then if they choose, they want to take it 2 hours later. That's their issue. And so there's no issue of having non-Jewish help in your house. And you're not going to be marred by b'shvilam. They're the workers. They're not an invited guest. So you have to figure out how this issur plays out. In terms of other things to be aware of at the time when the person is in the geirus process, again, here we're talking about people who are mamish, who are not Jewish l'chol deis. Sometimes you have a person who's a safek. You have a safek, so then obviously we can't tell them to be Chal Shabbos. Or you have a but if we have someone who's really, really, we know for a fact is not Jewish, so then we wouldn't really want them to be doing mitzvos unless they're doing it, not b'toras chiddush das. If they're doing it as an eina mitzvah, so that would be okay. So that's what the Radvaz has a shaila about when the Rambam seems to imply that if the non-Jew wants to volunteer to do mitzvahs while he's, for whatever reason, not as a chiddush das, we're okay with that. Radvaz says, are there certain mitzvahs that we put our foot down on? So maybe mitzvahs of Kedusha. Would we give him tefillin? The non-Jew says he wants a bear tefillin. The non-Jew wants to put a mezuzah up on his door. Would we allow that? Or would we say, that's like a bizoyan to the Dovish of Kedusha? So we would have to stop right there. So it's a suffix in the Radvaz. So we have the shaila. I've had the shaila multiple times, not all that long ago, about very often you have programs that a kid thinks he's Jewish, he comes in a summer program, then he realizes he's b'chlal not Jewish, the holiday is not Jewish, you can't throw him off the program, so that's not shaykh, it's chal Hashem, it's not proper middos, so it's going to impact him. So obviously he's going to continue on the program, and all the boys are wearing tefillin, and he wants to wear tefillin, and they're having hanochas tefillin for all the Baal Tshuva who are putting on tefillin for the first time, he wants to be a tefillin, so it's very, very tricky. So the Radvaz is a suffix. So I don't know. I'm not sure what to tell you. Sometimes there are grounds to be mekel. I'm not sure whether it's also in the first place. So it's a very, very tricky kind of a shaila. It's interesting. There was a. It's in Yom Yoma for today. There was, if I'm not mistaken. There was a famous hashgacha brought this famous story that happened right before 1948, before the first Yom Ha'atzmaut, that when things were still up in the air, it wasn't even clear that the partition plan was even going to go through, and the British were nervous, and the Arabs were drawn crazy, and now the Americans started to get cold feet. There was a lot of tumbling going on those few months between November 29th and the first, and then May 15th. So there was a push to try to get Harry Truman, was the president of the United States at the time, to get him on board, because America first was in favor, then they were hemming and hawing, and it got very complicated. And the way the story goes, it's written up in many, many places, that Truman Bichlau wasn't interested in talking to the Jews anymore. He was tired, and he wasn't interested in being bothered. And Mamash Hashkocha, Mina Shemayim, that he had a business partner before he was president. 20 years before, he had a business partner he owned a clothing store with in Missouri, a man by the name of Eddie Jacobson, and they had owned some an underwear store 20 years before, and he was still good friends with Harry Truman. And apparently some people from the Jewish agency, whatever it was running the show there all the time, got in touch with this Eddie Jacobson, and they told me he's got to get to the president. You got to get into the president. And he got through to the president. And he convinced Truman to meet with, at the time, was Chaim Weizmann. Chaim Weizmann was one of the big players in the Zionist movement at the time. And this Galgal Advarim, for that business partner in selling underwear in Missouri in the 1920s, that set the stage. Eventually, the story's written up in many, 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 many places. So I don't know exactly at what point, but at some point, I don't know whether it was at that meeting itself or was it a later point when Chaim Weizmann presented to Truman a Sefer Torah. That was like the thank you. So he got him a little, he presented, it was a famous picture of him handing over a little mini Sefer Torah to Harry Truman. So I remember when I saw that picture, and I remember this Radvaz. So I put the two together. I said, "So Safik and the Radvaz." I said, "Is that right or not?" I said, "You give me a Sefer Torah. It's one thing, you write the words of the Torah on the Avonim, so the guy will read it. Now here, you give me a Tashvisha Kedusha, give me a Dosh for Kedusha. It's not like giving them a prayer tefillin." They didn't ask me. The guy, Chaim Weizmann didn't call me to ask me. I wasn't born yet. Even if I was born, he wouldn't have asked me the shaila whether you're allowed to do it. But I thought that was. I don't think I told the story in the past, but since it's Baba Yom, or almost Baba Yom, some kind of Baba Yom, so I figured I'd share you that tidbit of a Jewish history. Okay, getting back to that story. So a lot of the things we've been talking about are things that are supposed to predate the Geirus, issues that we should be aware of before the person actually converts. What are some of the halachas to be aware of after the person converts? So one of the halachas is that it's done deal. There's no going back, with the rare exception of get caught on. So a regular Geirus, you can't go back on. If you gloy milsel mafreya, that the whole thing was shambi day from day one, and the basin was puzzle, or there was no kibbutz. So that's not going back. That's igloy milsel made that there's never gerus in the first place. But imtum zolaymi, that the gerus was paskin, that it was correct, it was chal b'shaito. So in the gemara says befeirish in the fourth peg of Yevamos, that even if the person becomes a mamish and ovid of edizara, so we cannot undo his gerus, and he has a din like yisrael mumar. My nafkim, the gemara says im kidesh isha kedushim, that of a ovid of edizara can once the person was Jewish, either he was born Jewish or he became a ger, even if he becomes mamish, an ovid of a nazar again, so the kedushin is full-fledged kedushin. The overwhelming majority of the Rishonim hold that's a din min haTorah. There's one opinion in Gaonim that maintains that maybe that's only a chumah min haRabbanan, that maybe takah min haTorah, if you become an ovid of a nazar, you can mamish lose kedushas Yisrael. But we don't follow that halacha. We paskin like all the other Rishonim will say that it's not true that Yisrael apishachad Yisraelu, even though he's ovid of a nazar, he became a priest, he became becomes the head of another religion. It doesn't matter what he becomes. Yisrael apishachad Yisraelu, he's still considered to have the din of Yisrael, and he has to just Yisrael. This was a very, very hot topic in the Middle Ages. Every once in a while, you had a person who would defect from the Jewish community, and they would become a galach, they become a priest, and sometimes they would leave the Jewish wife behind, and they don't want to give a get. So the shaila is, does the wife need a get? So there was one day in Gaonim that says that maybe only a midrabbanan she needs a get, maybe not midaraisa. So that was never accepted. L'halocha. Nobody ever followed such a shita. L'halocha l'mais. That's not been part of a regular Jewish practice for quite some time. The Gaonim had a lot of discussion about this in terms of Yibum and Chalitza. Every once in a while, you had a person who was married to a nice, firm guy, a nice, firm girl, and then the husband dies without any children. So the wife falls for Chalitza, and the only person around, the only brother around, is the Galach. He's Jew went off the derech, he became another religion, and he's not particularly interested in doing chalitza right now. So some Rishonim said, maybe not chalitza, because he's not Jewish. Other Rishonim had an interesting thing. Some Gaonim had a very, very hard to understand what they meant. There's a din in Yavamas that says, Eish ha-zachar shlo hoya ba'olamai. That means that if you have two brothers who never overlapped in terms of life, let's say Reuben's married, and now he dies, and then the only brother that's born is now born after Reuben already died. So since the two brothers never overlap, but olam echad, so then there's no zika. Then she doesn't have to wait for that brother. She just goes free. That's called eish ha-zachar shlo hoya ba'olamai. So some of the Gaonim use the phrase that when you have a brother who went off the deep end and converted to another religion, is Eina Ba'olama, because he's going to Olam Haba on a Ratzav Imran, he's going to Olam Hazeh, he's going to Olam Haba, he's going to Ganim, so that's called Eina Ba'olama Echad. I think it was only meant as a malitza. I don't think they really meant it in any degree of mamash seriousness. But there was an opinion in Rishonim that claimed that maybe the person mamash loses Kedushas Yisrael. But again, we don't accept that. And this is equally true if you have a goy who converts. So once the person converted up, he didn't. Once the Beis on Kapaskin, there was a real Kabbal Sabitz at the time. It was genuine, and the process was done properly. There is no turning back. One can never, ever undo a Yeris. We have a practice that there are more quotes in Minik from Rishonim, from the Ritva, from Yais Ben Yavamis, that if a person either was born Jewish or converted to become Jewish, if they go off the derech to the point where they bound to come and open the bazaar, they join another religion, and then they want to be chelz b'tshuva, so we have a minhag to do a geirus in them again, not a real geirus. We send them to the mikvah as a midas chaz, as a chumr b'yam, as a minhag, a minhag or something. You send them to the mikvah, but it doesn't impact really. It's more of a sign of being chelz b'tshuva. The raya that the Ritva brings is from Eved Kenayni. The Gemara says in the fourth Berachah of Yavamis, when you're free in Eved Kenayni, he becomes Jewish and full-fledged Jew, and then you have to send him back to the mikvah a second time. He went the first time. What is he going the second time for? So some Rishonim say he has to go the second time in the raya. That's what the Rambam entices him to say. And the Ritva says, no, he already was yaitzeh the tefillah with the fur when he became an Eved. The second tefillah is just midas chasidus biyama, just the rabbanim biyama, just to show that he's coming back and he's coming into the fold of being fully Jewish. And therefore the Ritva writes, and therefore if a person converted to another religion wants to be chaz b'tshuva, we should send him to the mikvah again. But again, it doesn't impact on his Jewishness. Once I was saying a shiur in out of town community about a number of geirus, and I quoted this Ritva, and an older gentleman came up to me. It was right before Shal Shudas time. And an older gentleman came up to me, like 5 minutes before Shkia, and he said he has to speak to me about something personal. And whenever you're giving Shabbat Geirus and someone says they want to talk about something personal, that's not a good sign. So I said, okay, what do you talk about? So he said, you want to tell me a story? He said he was born Jewish, and his parents converted to Christianity when he was a little boy. He was baptized, he was raised as a Christian, and then later in life he came back to his roots, and now he's totally from me. Now he's in a minyan, and he's from Shabbat, and beautiful, wonderful. So I said, so what do you want from me? I didn't say, what do you want from me? So he said to me, is it really true that I'm supposed to go to the mikvah? So I thought he was all nervous. Maybe he misunderstood. I thought he was saying that he wasn't Jewish till he goes to the mikvah. So I said, no. It's a minhag. It's a custom to go to the mikvah. That doesn't impact. You're 100% Jewish. You were born Jewish. You already was up 50 years. Chaz b'tshuva, nothing to worry about. You're 100% Jewish. It's a custom to go to the mikvah. So he looks at me straight in the face. And he goes, it's an older man. He says to me, Rabbi, that's what I did. That's what they told me 20 years ago when I came back. They made me go to the mikvah. I just want to make sure that rabbi knew what he was talking about. At that point, I looked at my wife and said, Peshki, I miss Shal Shudas because of this. This guy had to pour out his life saga story to me. But anyway, at least I made somebody feel good. Okay, back to that story. So once a person's Jewish, once Jewish, always Jewish. What are some of the other halachas that govern somebody after they convert? So the din is that they're api halacha, at least in the Torah, they're not really related to their previous relatives. So the Gemara has this in terms of Hilchos Arayas, that that Me'ikra Din, that let's say you have a brother and sister who convert, so Me'ikra Din, they can't mamash get married to each other because Gesh is guy, and they're not related, a mother and a son, father and daughter, Gesh is guy, they're not considered to be related at all. Nevertheless, Min Derabbanan, Chazal made a Takana for two different reasons. Taisus points out in Yavamas, there are two different reasons for the Takana. One was Shilayom Ubar Mekdusha Chamul Kedusha Kala, that people are going to think that when we were Goyim, it was immoral to marry a sister. Now I became Jewish, I can marry my sister. So people are going to laugh at Judaism and say, ah, these Jews, they're immoral, they're unethical, they do all these, you know, depraved practices. It's better to be a Goy. So it's going to lead L'dechil Hashem. So therefore, whoever you couldn't marry when you were a Goy, so that those Yisurim, although Min HaTorah don't exist, but Min Derabbanan they exist. Shilayom Ubar Mekdusha Chamul Kedusha Kala. The other reason, Taisus shows from the Gemara Yavamas, is that we're afraid Shem Asi L'Hachlef B'Yisrael. Not everybody knows his din, so if someone's going to come to a wedding and they see the rabbis beside a kedusha for a brother and sister, they go, great, brother and sister, allowed to get married. So they didn't come to shul parsha. They missed Achrei Mos. They went from Eretz Yisrael to Chutzlars. They missed the parsha, so they didn't read parsha Achrei Mos. So they didn't realize that that's an Issacharis. So to avoid any confusion, Midrabanan, we're not going to let certain people get married. But Midaraisa, they would be allowed to marry, and then certain people, even Midrabanan, they would be permitted. That's a whole complicated sugya in Maseches Sanhedrin, Maseches Yevamos. So that idea, Shlo, Yom Ubanan Kedusha Chamul Kedushakala, is an important principle because it permeates other aspects of post-gerus as well, that there's always questions about what relationship the ger should have with his previous family, with his non-Jewish background family. So should he do kibbutz aveim? Should he observe aveilus for the people? You know, if a goyish relative passed away, so min haTorah, none of those things apply. That the ikra din is not related. Nevertheless, the Moshe writes in Tshuva that you should do whatever standard practice in the goyish world. That means in the non-Jewish world, people are respectful of the parents. You should be respectful of your non-Jewish parents also, because shelo yomu banu b'kedusha chamul b'kedusha kala. So Moshe has a Tshuva about there was a woman who was a geiris who asked Moshe the following shaila. That her non-Jewish mother was very sick and she lived far away. And she wanted to know, should she go and move in and help her mother for a couple of months? It's going to mean living in a place where there's no kosher food, and it's going to be a big hassle with Shabbos, there's going to be a lot of issues. On the other hand, the mother wants her to come, so should she do that or not? So Moshe said yes. He said, because in the non-Jewish world, that's normal. It means if a non-Jewish, if a regular parent really needs you, so that's the standard care. You have to do when you're Jewish what the standard care in the non-Jewish world is. Otherwise, it's going to lead to Chil Hashem. She's going to explain to the Goyish mother, no, I'm not coming because I'm not related to you. So that's a bit tremendous Chil Hashem. So people are going to think Judaism is an unethical religion. So therefore, you have to keep up the standards. So this touches on other issues also, like walking down for the chuppah. Let's say a ger, yoris, wants to get married. What role should the non-Jewish parents have at the chuppah? So in the Goyisha world, walking a child down the aisle is an important thing. So you're going to turn around to the non-Jewish parents and say, nope, you're not walking me down because you're not my parent. So they're going to be very offended. So that's going to lead to a Chil Hashem also. So one has to be careful. Not only one should be careful about Chil Hashem, and one should be careful about Midas Tovos and Nakras HaTov, but there's a halachic concern here. So those kinds of things permeate. On the other hand, you don't have to go above and beyond what the Goyim do. So let's say L'mashal Avelus. So let's say a non-Jew loses a parent. So in the Goyisha world, they don't sit shiva for a week. So you're not mechuv to sit shiva for a week. Maybe in the non-Jewish world, they sit around for a day or two and they talk, tell stories. They do, I don't know, whatever they do to commemorate the loss of somebody. So you let's say l'mashal, there's a one member of a family converted. So all the other siblings are taking off the day from work and they're sitting around and having a, I don't know, whatever they're doing. And they're, nope, I'm going to work. I have nothing to do with you because Gesh has got control of doing. That's also, they're going to look at us askance. They're going to say that you guys are not moral, you're not ethical. So you have to always, that should be the guiding feature in terms of all of these halachas.
What do we do with things that are like normally mandatory, like against the Torah, like the and stuff like that?
If it's against the halacha, that's something else. But again, it could be that these things are not really against the halacha because that's already a whole another issue about it. You know, if you have a relative who's is a general adopted, the general questions about Yichud and Kichibavanishik, those kinds of things with adopted children. There are different opinions about this. There were some who were very machmir. This is a little bit more makil if the person was adopted at a very young age. Again, it's a whole other another world. So one has to figure out how you pass in that shayla, you know, in terms of it's a general shayla. There is a very, very important part of post-Gerus, probably the most important part for us, and that's how the Jewish community has to open up their arms to the Gerim. The Torah says it. Countless times, it's counted, but many, many times, the Torah says, like, yeah, Yosef, money, you have to take care of the Gerim. The Gemara says, why are we so machbar on the Gerim to be so careful about the Gerim Shasura Ra? Because, you know, a Ger is always on the edge, you know, you never know. He's very sensitive, and rightfully so. He gave up everything, and now he's coming to join the Jewish community, and the Jewish community is going to be cold to him. So that's a big, big problem. So we have to open up our hearts, and open up our shuls, and open up our schools. And we have to, again, we have to do it in a way, you know, that we want to, on the one hand, we want to ensure that our communities are up to the proper standards, but we have to deal with old people, deal with non-from people also. We have to always figure out a way to be as open and possible as we can. So we have to be extra special, go the extra mile in terms of a ger. If somebody, if you have any opportunity ever to fulfill the mitzvah there, I have to miss a ger. Mamish, every time you do something, you do a favor, you do a tayyar for a ger. You're nice, I'm extra specially sensitive. I know there's one particular georis, which doesn't live in our community, but she's living in the greater Tina community. And every year she would call me to sell hacham. She didn't have my shul. She didn't live near my shul, but we had a little relationship with her. And every year she would text me to sell hachametz. She was always like the last one. She would say, Erev Pesach, I'm running to Mechiras Chametz. She would always be the last one to tell me. So, you know, at the end of the day, I would tell anyone it's chametz, even if it's not a ger. But I used to always go out of my way to Hinni Mucham Zuman, had him on the Shem Mitzvah Havitz. I never criticized her. I never corrected her. I never told her that. How come you weren't online for a week before like everybody else? I said, Mitzvah Deraisa, opportunity, Erev Pesach. Tashbisu is probably not a deraisa. Burning chametz is probably not a deraisa. But Haftam is a ger for sure a deraisa. So you have to look for opportunities to go the extra mile to be extra specially nice and invite over for meals, invite for Shabbos, and especially in Yom Tovim. There's a pasuk in Chumash, like ger, yasam amri yer, mamish to be able to be samacht, ger lifnei Hashem. That's a tremendous thing. So it's something that we as a community have to be really, really, really extra specially careful about to embrace them and to hopefully bring them, as close as possible to under the kanfei Shechina, which is to understand that they sacrifice so much to be able to join us. Okay, so I think that's pretty much the overview of Hilchos Geiros. Okay, we've learned a lot of Hatzlach, and remember what we said in the first year, that Hilchos Geiros, you got to learn Hilchos Geiros really, really well before you pass Kinshasa and Hilchos Geiros, and make sure that Hilchos Geiros is done properly.